I do not appear to have a gavel, so we're going to start. Just imagine that it gets. Thank you for that. Okay, calling to order this this first meeting of the session of the Children, Families, Finance, and Policy Committee. I'm Representative Dave Pinto, the chair, and I'm so glad to be back with everybody. Apologies for the logistical hurdles as we're getting going here, but we have a nice crowd of folks. And we're going to be taking the role in just a second. We are we've joined by a couple of new folks. We've got a new page and new committee legislative assistant and a new member who's joining us as well. I want to start as we usually do. This is Mr. Rohrer's first meeting. We're so glad to have him with us. We're going to start as we usually do with the taking of the role. And Mr. Rohrer, are you able to do that? Okay.
Representative Pinto?
Present.
Representative Keeler?
Present.
Representative Daniels?
Present.
Representative Coulter?
Present.
Representative Davis?
Present.
Representative Hansen?
She's going to be stuck in traffic. She's a little delayed.
Representative Hemmingson-Yeager?
Present.
Representative Hicks?
Present.
Representative Hudson?
Present.
Representative Katiza-Watoon?
Present.
Representative Lee?
Present.
Representative Nelson?
Present.
Representative Rose-Vega?
Probably a little delayed as well, I suspect.
Representative Zalesnikar?
And probably also that's true for her, too.
I'm Representative Burkle.
Good. Excellent. So we do have a quorum, and so let's knock our way through a couple sets of minutes if we can. You should have three sets in your packets, members. So I'm actually going to go in the chronological order instead of the orders in the agenda. So we'll start with March 29th of 2023. Hopefully folks have had a chance to take a look at that. I'll ask Madam Vice Chair Keeler to move approval of the minutes of March 29th, if you may. Madam Chair, Madam Vice Chair.
Reviewing the minutes, I ask to move the minutes of March 29th.
Thank you. Any discussion, additions, or corrections, members? Hearing none, all in favor of approval of the minutes of March 29th, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, those minutes are done. And then, Vice Chair Keeler, if you would, the minutes of March 30th.
Moving minutes for March 30th.
Okay, thank you. Any additions or corrections, members? Hearing none, then all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, that motion passes as well for March 30. And then finally, November 13th, if you may, Madam Vice Chair.
Moving minutes for November 13th.
Okay, any additions or corrections, members? And hearing none, then all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. The minutes, the motion passes, November 13th. We've got three sets of minutes adopted. Thank you for that, members. So we do have a few additional folks here. We have a new committee legislative assistant. You've heard his voice reading the role. And Mr. Rohrer, if you would mind just introducing yourself, anything that you want to say about your background before coming to join our committee.
Thank you very much, everyone. My name is Caleb Rohrer. I use him pronouns, and I'm just very happy to be here serving this committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Rohrer was legislative assistant last session, right? And so glad to have you with our committee now. And then Representative Burkle has joined the committee. Representative Burkle, at the beginning of last session, folks shared just kind of their connection with this committee's work or why they want to be on or anything that you'd like to share about your district or otherwise. Please, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. John Burkle, representative from 1A up in Kitson, Marshall, Pennington, Roseau counties. I guess the fact that I'm a father of five and grandfather of seven, soon to be grandfather of seven, should make me relevant. But that's why I'm here. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Reverend Burke. We're really glad to have you with us. And then finally, we have a new committee page, and it's look at that! I got a gavel. excellent. And I know that her first name is Florence, and I'm so sorry that I'm recalling your last name. But if you could please stand and say your last name, if you can. I want you. Okay. And pleasure. And so glad to have you with us. And welcome. Glad to have you with us. Thanks so much. Yeah, so we are back all together here. So, so members, the plan today is in a second we're going to be going through a bill that came out of our work last session. I'll explain that more when I go up to the testifier table and make a motion on that. And then a presentation on our work from last session, an update on the impact of it to address homelessness. We had a presentation in November about our work regarding early care and learning. I know we're going to have a presentation on our work regarding food security. But I wanted to start off this session focusing on, because a really historic historic transformational work in this really critical area of homelessness. I guess I'll say as we're starting session that there's a number of things that we still need to do in a number of areas of our committee's jurisdiction, child protection being a particular priority. I know we'll continue to discuss that. I will encourage members that if and as you have ideas in any areas of our committee jurisdiction, please be in touch with Ms. Colburn, our committee administrator, with the phenomenal researchers, Ms. Peterson and Mr. Withers. Be in touch with me. Things are going to move fast, and there's certainly a lot of work to be done, and so we want to be in touch with each other. So any questions about kind of what we're doing either today or since this is the first hearing, the arc of the session at all? And not seeing anything. So then in that case, I'm going to go up to the testifier table with my materials here, and I turn things over to Vice Chair Keeler, and I'll be making a motion regarding the bill. Madam Chair, when you're, if you're ready, I'll make my motion.
I'm always ready.
You are always ready. That's true.
All right. Next on the agenda, we have House File 3646 from Chair Pinto. Chair Pinto moves that House File 3646 be referred to the Committee on Human Service Policy. Chair Pinto, please tell us about your bill.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair, and that is indeed my motion. So members, last session we passed legislation to establish a Department of Children, Youth, and Families. As part of that legislation, we directed the reviser to develop, put together a bill to rearrange statutes, to recodify statutes to accomplish that agency. So the bill before you, this quite large bill, the reason it's so large is because it's moving sections of statutes around. It was prepared by the reviser's office in consultation with nonpartisan staff and state agencies. I will say just at the outset, I anticipate that there will be more legislation relating to the new agency, both the establishment of it, but then also details in it, and then certainly the content of different policy areas within our committee later in session. This is just giving the statutory infrastructure so that as proposals are being developed, we've got the foundation for them. So this is really on behalf of the reviser and our nonpartisan staff, and I'm very much being hands-off, and they are really the ones putting this, who put this together. I do have, Madam Chair and members, an amendment to just, as things have continued to move along, that I was told that this will continue to make this work better, and it may be that if it's okay with members, because this is all coming in the form of the reviser and nonpartisan staff have worked on, that we would adopt the A24 amendment, and then I'd ask that reviser and I think it's maybe Ms. Mock would walk us through the whole bill, but perhaps we could do the A24 amendment, and I would move that, Madam Chair, if I can now.
Okay, all those in favor of the A24 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. Ayes have it. Go ahead.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. And so I think Ms. Mock was the one who's going to be walking us through the bill as amended.
Ms. Mock?
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. I'm Annie Mock with House Research, and I'm going to do a very high-level walkthrough of House File 3646, and then we will be available for questions. So as Chair Pinto described, last session the legislature passed a law establishing a new agency, the Department of Children, Youth, and Families, and that law identified powers and duties that belong to existing state agencies that are going to transfer to the new department beginning July 1st of this year. The law also instructed the reviser of statutes, in consultation with House and Senate nonpartisan staff and state agency staff, to identify any changes to Minnesota statutes and rules that are necessary to facilitate the transfer of responsibilities and related operational functions to the new department. The reviser was required to submit that draft legislation with the necessary statutory changes to the legislature by February 1st, and what's before the committee today, House File 3646, is that draft legislation. So given the complexity and volume of the affected statutes that were part of this task, you can see it in the size of the bill there, staff decided to accomplish the recodification by moving, or in some cases, duplicating affected statutes into seven new chapters of statute organized by topic. So members, in your packets, you have a document that was prepared by my colleague, Ms. Punelli. It's Department of Children, Youth, and Families Statute Recodification. This document is a crosswalk showing how existing statutes are proposed to be reorganized and modified under House File 3646. If you turn to page 3 of the document, you'll see a list of the proposed new statutory chapters. And then if you turn to page 4, I'll just briefly walk you through how to use this document. So for each proposed new chapter, you'll find a brief description of what's in the chapter and a table with more detailed information. And in that table, the first column in the table lists the proposed section coding and headnotes for the new chapter. And then the second column lists the proposed subdivisions and headnotes for each section. And then the third column identifies the current coding for those provisions. So the first two columns are where we're proposing to move the statutes, and the third column is where they are currently, where they're coming from. So this document goes through this for each of the new proposed chapters. So in addition to illustrating the reorganization that is proposed under this bill, the tables in this document also include a few provisions that were enacted in the 2023 legislative session that were not identified in law as transferring to the new department, but were understood by nonpartisan staff to be transferring to the new department in a separate bill. So these provisions, which, like I said, are included in the document prepared by my colleague, are not in House File 3646. Okay, so going back to House File 3646, when working on the recodification, in addition to identifying statutes to move or duplicate, which are in the HRD document, nonpartisan staff also identified statutes that need to be modified but not necessarily moved or duplicated to accomplish the task of transferring the duties to the new department. So House File 3646 includes those proposed changes, but because they're not part of the reorganization, they're not in the HRD document. Hopefully that wasn't too confusing, but finally I'll just note that this recodification is intended to be technical, and it is not intended to change existing policy or to have a fiscal impact beyond the reorganization of executive branch functions and the establishment of the new state agency. And with that, I want to be cognizant of the committee's time, so I'll leave it there.
Thank you, Ms. Mock. I will pause and just say how fantastic our staff is, and I know that this took so much work. Just want to acknowledge your time and your energy and your efforts around that. Thank you. Chair Pinto, do you have any additional things, or do you want us to move on to questions, comments?
Madam Chair, I'll just echo and thank you for thanking them, because you're exactly right. We need to be doing that, because I know this is a tremendous amount of work. I know I think we're ready to move to any questions that members have. I will note that the reviser, representative reviser's office who prepared this is here as well, I think, to help answer questions. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Sounds good. Any member questions? Seeing none, just making sure, is there anybody here that wishes, Representative Nelson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and I'm not sure if this is for Ms. Mock or the author, but you did, you know, there's, thanks for the table on, you know, showing what's moving or what's not moving, but I just, it also sounds like there are some things that are modified but not necessarily moved just to, I don't know if you have an example of one that you could just pull off the top of your head quickly, you know, just so we have an idea on that. Thank you.
Ms. Mock?
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. So an example of something that is modified but not moving is early childhood special education provisions. So early childhood special education, or Part C as it's commonly called, is being transferred to the new department. However, those statutes are very intertwined with the other special education statutes, so we decided not to move those statutes from their current place in statute in 125A, but instead we added language to those statutes identifying that Part C, those responsibilities and duties, are transferring to the new department.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other member questions? We didn't have any testifiers on the list, but just calling to see if anybody in the room wants or needs to testify regarding this. Seeing none, any final words on your bill before we go to the vote?
No, I'll just, I will again thank staff and to thank Dean and Cassie from the reviser's office. I think that they're probably here in the audience, and just a big thank you to them for their really hard work. Grateful to you, and thank you, Madam Chair.
Hearing no further discussion, Chair Pinto renews his motion that House File 3646 as amended be referred to the Committee on Human Service Policy. All those in favor, aye.
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 All those opposed, say nay. Ayes have it.
Coming back up.
House File 3646, as amended, passes and is referred to the Committee on Human Service Policy.
Thank you, Vice Chair Keeler, and thank you, members, very much for that. And I know I meant to say this at the beginning, but I know the nonpartisan staff had made the point that getting this done very early in session is going to be extremely helpful for later in session. So I really appreciate the cooperation of members in making this happen for that goal. So I'm really excited to move on to our next topic, which relates to the impact of our 2023 funding to address homelessness. We're going to need to set up we've got a couple presentations, or at least one, so we're going to get that set up. As that is set up, I'll note again, and I was reflecting on this, that we actually voted on the Pathway Home Act, I think, five times, because we passed it through our committee, and then through the full House, and then in our committee's budget, and then through the full House. And then it came back from conference, and it was a long fight. And I thank Vice Chair Keeler for her incredible work as the author of that bill. And what happened was just incredible impact on Minnesotans experiencing homelessness. And so what I wanted to do is to hear more about, get an update on the course of that funding and the impact that it's had. We know that mission is not accomplished. There's plenty more to do, but my goodness, what an impact it's had. So. Ms. Coburn's getting that set up. Of course, we're ahead of schedule, so we're doing okay there. Okay, looks like we're pretty well. Okay, excellent. Yeah, so as our first testifier, Kathy Tenbrook, Assistant Commissioner and Executive Director of the Minnesota Interagency Council on Homelessness, is with us. So glad, and so Commissioner, please proceed as you are ready to do so.
Thank you very much, Chair Pinto, Vice Chair Keeler, and members of the committee. It's great to see you again. Thank you for your incredible work last session. My main goal today is to share some of the implementation of what's happened with those investments so far. And just really quickly before I do, Minnesota Interagency Council on Homelessness always starts with this land acknowledgement. Today as we start, it is of utmost importance that we all recognize the land we are living and working on is stolen land from our Native American relatives. We must seek to understand our place within that history and use that understanding to work towards justice. So I understand there's one or two new members of the committee and folks in the room and listening, and I just want to very, very quickly describe what the Interagency Council on Homelessness is. It's led by our Lieutenant Governor. It's a cabinet-level body, co-chaired by our Housing Commissioner, our Human Services Commissioner. It has the commissioners of all of these agencies that sit together to really drive the administration's priorities and work on housing stability and homelessness, and to help build interagency policy and budgets as well. This is done in direct partnership with people with lived experience of homelessness and our community partners from all across the state. So, to the task at hand, thanks again for the incredible work. Largest investment in housing stability and homelessness in state history. The total housing stability budget that was signed into law from last session was $2.6 billion, and that spanned, you know, nine agencies really intended to address all the continuum of housing needs, from preventing and ending homelessness, creating a healthy rental market for low-income renters, and closing the disparities in homeownership. The increased funding is at work now to do what you see in those four boxes there. We know these are the things we need to do to end homelessness in this state. So addressing, you know, the increase in the amount of housing and shelter, affordability, accessibility, and access to services. So I put the QR code right there on the slide for you. You can see the entirety of the $2.6 billion budget, which might help put what you've done in this committee in context of the whole. So agency teams have all been working really hard to implement the increased resources out of last session. And so I'm going to show you just a few slides to show you some examples of what that implementation looks like. The Department of Human Services Office of Economic Opportunity manages the majority of resources that support shelter housing and transitional housing, shelter outreach and transitional housing that came out of the work of this committee. As you see at the top of this slide, they put out a combined RFP for many of their programs. So it includes the Emergency Services Program, Emergency Solutions Grant, which is actually, those are federal dollars, the Transitional Housing Program, and the Homeless Youth Act. Those are all in their combined RFP. They do that intentionally to help support community partners across the state to make it easier for them to apply for one RFP. And in the most recent RFP, they awarded over $100 million in funding. This is up from $35 million that was available in the prior fiscal year. They did, however, receive almost three times, the amount of requests. So they received $285 million in requests from 135 applicants, which really does show just how immense the need is all across the state. We know, of course, that this is a statewide challenge, so you can see on here that the dollars also go out statewide, with 45% of the funding awarded in Greater Minnesota and 55% awarded in the metro. To get into just a little bit more of the detail about each of these state-funded programs, so the Emergency Services Program provides emergency shelter, motel vouchers, day shelter, outreach, essential services for children and unaccompanied youth, single adults, and families who are experiencing homelessness. So very broad reach of work that that program does. There were $42.9 million in awards in fiscal year 24-25 out of that program. This is an increase of $30 million from the prior fiscal year, so a significant increase. It supported 74 new programs, so that is really something, including 12 culturally specific organizations. There was a 125% increase in the average award as well, which the average award is about $590,000 in a biennium. The Transitional Housing Program funds time-limited rental assistance and supportive services to households experiencing homelessness, and this essentially doubled in funding from the prior fiscal year, awarded 44 entities across the state. And you can see that this funding will support enhanced services at existing programs as well as new programs that are targeting Black, Indigenous, people of color communities, and people with co-occurring risks for homelessness, HIV, and people fleeing domestic violence. The Homeless Youth Act. Through this program, funding is provided for outreach and drop-in, emergency shelter programs, integrated supportive services, supportive housing for homeless youth and youth at risk of homelessness. It is an extremely flexible program, and as I know you've heard from testifiers over the years, something that the homeless youth providers really value in this state, very unique across the country in the work that it does. It had 40.9 million available in fiscal year 24-25, and this is also an increase of 30 million from the prior year. It's supporting 48 entities, including 7 new programs. So very, very high impact of the Homeless Youth Act. Safe Harbor Shelter and Housing. This one is a separate RFP. This is not a part of the combined RFP that OEO does. But is 11.3 million. This is also an increase, again, of 4 million from the prior fiscal year. And what that did was increase from 133 beds statewide to 186 beds and expanded its geographic reach. This is a program that delivers specialized services to youth who are victims of sexual exploitation through emergency shelter, supportive housing, and specialized foster care and outreach. So the shelter-linked mental health, this is a newer resource. It was passed actually in the prior session, the 2022 session, passed during the 2019 session. So this supports mental health-focused services targeted to youth experiencing homelessness and experiencing sexual exploitation. So programming to prepare youth to receive services, assisting youth in obtaining health insurance, on-site mental health services, et cetera. So you can see what those dollars are doing as well. And then the Homeless Youth Cash Stipend. This is a new pilot that you established last session. This is the first direct cash transfer intervention for youth experiencing homelessness in Minnesota. It was funded directly to Youth Prize, so there was not an RFP for this. This was a direct transfer. The impact will be studied, but certainly there have been really positive studies of direct cash transfers from around the country. And then, of course, the new $100 million in shelter capital. Thank you again, Vice Chair Keeler, for your advocacy on this. This is a brand new thing that the state of Minnesota is doing. Never has had capital for shelter go out this way. So this has been tremendous. We did receive well over three times the amount of request for that $100 million. But 47% of those funds went out to Greater Minnesota, 53% in the Seven County Metro. And we have an anticipated amount of increase that this will bring in terms of shelter beds. And you can see which ones will be preserved, you know, what amount is of preserved, maintained, and improved. And then just to close out, I want to just make it, put this also in context, that at the administration, at the Interagency Council on Homelessness, we have a statewide plan focused on housing, health, and racial justice for people facing homelessness. This plan was committed to at the end of last year, so we are in the middle of implementing it. The investments that you have made last session and will continue to make are really the fuel for us doing this work. This plan was written and co-led by people with lived experience of homelessness, really a remarkable process with partners across the state. So grateful for the investments made to help us do that work. And then finally, just a reminder of how we measure our success for the Interagency Council's work and the strategic plan. Not only do we want to see this number go down on any given night, our last point in time count showed over 8,000 people statewide experiencing homelessness. We also want to reduce the disparities of who is experiencing homelessness. As you know very well from past times of hearing us testify and from our communities as well, it vastly overrepresents. People of color are vastly overrepresented in the homeless population. If you are American Indian, you're 28 times more likely to experience homelessness than a white Minnesotan. And if you're black, you're 13 times more likely to experience homelessness than a white Minnesotan. So we'll be working to measure progress here as well. So with that, Chair Pinto, I just wanted to give a quick summary. We have experts from the Office of Economic Opportunity here who can answer really specific questions about the funding.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I suspect that Commissioner Tenbrook will be around through the end of our hearing today if there are questions. Though I just want to clarify a couple things myself, and I think because of where we're at schedule-wise, if folks do have questions for the commissioner, we can do some of those now, but then also at the end. But I just want to clarify that for folks that the transitional housing program that was referenced, and I think ShelterLink Mental Health were both programs that went through other committees, perhaps staff can confirm that for me, but I'm pretty sure that's correct. And Mr. Burke, I'll just confirm ShelterLink Mental Health and Transitional Housing Program both went through other committees, I think, as opposed to this one. And certainly, I may be spacing a little bit.
I believe the ShelterLink Mental Health
did.
Yeah, I think those two went through this one. What did not was the Shelter Capital.
Shelter Capital, we definitely had
three bills.
Yeah, it's a little confusing.
I can tell you later. I don't remember. I don't think it was this one, but that this one actually became one with what is in the House, the Liebling bill.
Right. Well, it all eventually got a little bit combined. Yeah. In any case, but of course, the great bulk of these items did just a tremendous amount of work. So, Commissioner, do you have something you're going to add on this or a response?
I just got confirmed. Transitional housing did go through this committee.
Oh, okay, good. And ShelterLink Mental Health, then, perhaps, yeah. In any case, it's all water under the bridge now. I think so.
The ShelterLink Mental Health.
Please, if you can introduce yourself.
Oh. Yeah. Good morning, committee. My name is Elizabeth Jessel. I'm the Director of Policy and Planning at the Minnesota Interagency Council on Homelessness. And the shelter-linked mental health grants passed a previous session, and so it would be over the jurisdiction of this committee, but it didn't pass with the things last legislative session.
Okay. It passed with the prior
2022.
Okay,
yeah.
Good. Thank you so much.
Yep.
All right. Well, sorry for being a spacey chair over here, but I'm glad we got that.
Yeah.
We got that all figured out. Are there questions right now for Commissioner Tenbrook? Yeah, Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for all of this. One question I have, just because I think one of the narratives that we hear a lot is, like, we don't have homelessness in our backyard, especially in greater Minnesota. That's one of the things, right? So I know you've given us numbers of how many people had applied. One of the things that's great about this is when we open up these RFPs, we learn about the disparities across the state. Mm-hmm. Do you have a map or a geographic breakdown to show us where all those applications came from, just so that we can have a glimpse of really seeing where maybe some of these high pockets of needs really are, but also for all of us to know if it's in our communities, what it looks like in our communities, and maybe how we can be advocates for that work?
Commissioner.
Thank you, Vice Chair Keeler. I don't know if we have a map. We certainly know where all the applications came from across the state, so I know that the Office of Economic Opportunity could get that for the committee if that would be of interest. We certainly know the percent of dollars that were requested, Greater Minnesota and in the metro, for all of those programs.
Vice Chair Keeler?
I think that's great. I think for some of us, like, numbers are great, but the visual of it is really well, especially with the Greater Minnesota voice at the table. I always like to see that it's an issue that's actually border to border. So if we could get that, that would be fantastic. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Vice Chair Keeler. Yeah, and I'll ask, I mean, the more insight we can get, right, and the more granularity, and maps are great, and but whatever that format that we can have that insight will be really, really helpful. And I'll maybe note in connection with that just to remind members of the committee that a lot of the strategy with the shelter capital was to be able to have people stay in their community and to make sure that we have the physical infrastructure around the state. And so I feel like, I guess I'd be interested in knowing those percentages and that geographic breakdown across the different programs as well, if that makes sense. So kind of the more granularity we get, the better. I'll maybe turn to our vice chair to see if anything about that you want to add, Madam Vice Chair? Okay. All right, thank you. Anything else from anybody for now for Commissioner Tenbrook? Not seeing anything. So, and Commissioner, you will be around through the end of this hearing? Okay, great. Good. Well, then we're going to, thank you so much. We'll have Paul Verrett come up if you can. And so we've heard from the administration regarding the funding that they received and sort of how it's gone out. And now we're going to hear a few perspectives on some of the impact that the funding has had. And so we'll start with Paul Verrett. If you can please, once you get settled in, introduce yourself, share your preferred pronouns if you're comfortable with that, and then proceed with your testimony.
My name is Paul Verrett. I use he, him pronouns, and I am the Public Policy Director of Agate Housing and Services. Chair Pinto, committee members, I'm the Public Policy Director of Agate, as I mentioned, a Minneapolis nonprofit organization working to end homelessness and relieve hunger by providing emergency street outreach, shelter, hunger relief, and permanent supportive housing and many other services that are essential to ending homelessness. Today, I am excited to speak to you about the immediate impact of the 2023 legislation to support efforts to end homelessness. I'm usually just here speaking on behalf of Agate and talking about Minneapolis homelessness and Twin Cities more urban homelessness. But today, I'm also fortunate to speak to you about an exciting expansion of housing and services at Oasis Central Minnesota, Oasis of Central Minnesota in Morrison County. And I'll also finish by telling you about some of the historic work in the Twin Cities. I want to thank Rose Sturm, the executive director at Oasis of Central Minnesota, for helping me to provide this information. And I'm also fortunate that she didn't come down here in the snow. Without the shelter capital and the ESP expansion, people experiencing homelessness in Morrison County would not be looking forward to the opening of a safer, more efficient, and accessible facility with enough beds to meet the needs in Morrison County. Located in Little Falls, Oasis has met this growing need for emergency shelter and services for many years by cobbling together hotel rooms and apartments. And for most of that time, its sole employee was the director, Rose Stern. With OEO funding during the pandemic, and combined with the legislature's hard work last year, Oasis is now able to add enough staff and enough high-quality shelter space to meet the needs of people in Morrison County. I cannot underscore the importance of this funding enough. Oasis of Central Minnesota is the only emergency shelter in Morrison County. The provision of this funding also makes it possible for Oasis to provide transportation and to find more shelter options in other parts of the county, which will help them to more easily end the isolation of rural homelessness in Morrison County more than ever before. And partly in response to Representative Keeler's question before, while I don't have statistics, I spent a lot of time talking to Rose about the way that OASIS works in Morrison County, and that can give you a good idea of what homelessness looks like there. As many of you are aware, rural homelessness is not always as visible as it is in rural urban areas. Mm-hmm. In urban areas, we often think of the more recent larger encampments, but in rural areas, particularly in Minnesota, up north where it's forested, it is very easy for people living in vacant structures, people living in much smaller encampments, people living in their cars parked in different out-of-the-way places. And then another thing is a lot of people are doubling up. Doubling up, which, you know, when you're younger, you think of as couch surfing, but when you're doubling up or couch surfing and it's not by choice, it is homelessness. And it's harder for people to count. It doesn't show up in the point in time counts. So a lot of the people that OASIS works with have been living in cars and places like that, other places that are not habitable, not safe for them. So this funding is helping them to actually get to those people and then bring them to shelter much more easily than they would have before. She gave me the example of one couple who actually walked for most of a whole day to get to their services. And now that couple would have been able to call and have someone come right away to come to them and make it much more easier for them to get services. Now I'm going to switch and talk a little bit about the impact for Agate Housing and Services. Agate received word on November 29th that we were selected in the Shelter Capital RFP. This is the last funding we needed to build a 54-bed emergency shelter co-located with 48 permanent supportive housing apartments on vacant land in the Longfellow neighborhood in South Minneapolis. We're going to be breaking ground on this shelter this spring. It's the culmination of efforts started all the way back in 2018 when the then St. Stephen's Human Services, which is one of our predecessors, organizations, were a product of a merger between St. Stephen's and House of Charity. They were using the occasion of moving out of a rectory basement to work with shelter guests and other leaders with lived experience to design a shelter that was made specifically to meet the needs for things like privacy, storage, more programming space, and just to have a building that's specifically designed to be a shelter rather than something that was shoehorned into a church basement or something like that. For many, many years in homelessness, we've relied on the generosity of faith communities and others who provided their facilities, and they were wonderful, generous facilities, but we unfortunately outgrew what we were hoping then was a temporary problem. And so cases like this exist all across the state where people are now building for the first time shelters that are specifically, they're in buildings specifically designed to be shelter. It's a huge achievement for us and a huge achievement for everyone who received one of those. And without the ESP program, we would not have services to staff those. So it is one of the best funding sources we have for that. So we look forward to using that. Right now, we're seeing an increase in unsheltered homelessness statewide. It's very public in urban areas like Minneapolis. Right now, we know that we have 48 known encampments. And the addition of a safe and well-designed shelter space is really going to help us meet that challenge. There are small amounts of beds that are open in shelters some night, but some people have chosen not to go to shelters because of concerns like safety, knowing they'll lose their possessions, and that the facilities won't meet their needs. And the addition of our 54 beds plus Simpson Housing is also adding a 70-bed new shelter. I think you'll hear from Catholic Charities, and you can also see the letter in your materials about improvements to their facility. And then there are also service expansions that are made possible by last year's work at the legislature. The combination of shelter and operational funding is going to really, really improve the ability of Minnesotans to meet the challenge of homelessness. Nonprofits and even the most affluent communities would have needed 3 to 5 years at least to raise the money needed to build similar shelters. Without the OAO funding, executive directors, board, staff, volunteers, they all would have been spending their time fundraising instead of housing, feeding, and supporting people experiencing homelessness, which, frankly, that is why they decided to do that. Rose from Oasis and others also wanted me to convey that they really appreciated the work of OEO. The technical assistance and support during the application process was really welcome. So not only is the funding providing needed resources, it also provided it throughout our entire state. Cities large and small, people experiencing rural homelessness, tribal nations, and other communities are benefiting from this funding. We know that shelter saves lives and housing ends homelessness. I know that so many people here share that commitment, and we thank you for it. And I thank you so much for this opportunity. I also wanted to let you know on behalf of the Coalition for the Homeless, you're going to be receiving a pile of thank you letters that will come from all parts of the state about your work. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Thank you for your work. Appreciate it. Karen Kingsley is up next. If you can please make your way to the front. And then once you get settled in, please share your preferred pronouns if you're comfortable with that, and then proceed with your testimony.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Karen Kingsley. I use she, her pronouns. And I serve as the Senior Director of Youth and Family Services at Lutheran Social Service of Minnesota. LSS is a member of the Youth Services Network, which is a statewide network of providers that support youth experiencing homelessness. I'm very, very pleased to be here this morning, Chair Pinto and members, to thank you for the investments that you made in the last legislative session, and to share some updates about how we've been able to expand services. At LSS, like many other organizations serving youth experiencing homelessness, we provide a seamless continuum of supports to youth, and that includes street outreach, youth resource centers, emergency shelter, transitional housing, independent living skills, and one-on-one assistance to help youth find and maintain housing and achieve life goals. And that continuum of services is very, very important. At LSS, we serve youth in more than 40 Minnesota counties from locations in Duluth, Virginia, Brainerd, St. Cloud, Wilmer, Mankato, Rochester, and St. Paul. In 2023, we served more than 1,600 youth from those communities. And this year, we expect to increase that to 3,000 youth with the increased funding, particularly for the Homeless Youth Act and Safe Harbor. I want to reiterate what Kathy Tenbrook said about the Homeless Youth Act being a flexible source of funding. It is really the critical infrastructure of helping young people across the state. We're going to be able to provide greater outreach to find unhoused youth, to connect youth with resources, and to create more transitional housing to move youth to stability. In St. Cloud and Virginia, we are able to start brand new programs through LSS that would not have been possible without the state investment. So we're very grateful for that. With increased Homeless Youth Act funding, our partners Avenues for Youth is doubling the size of their Young Families program, which supports youth experiencing homelessness who have children of their own. We know that approximately a third of youth experiencing homelessness are parenting, and there are significant gaps in supports and services for them. So this investment is really going to make a big impact. Avenues also received funding from the Emergency Shelter Capital funding that will allow them to replace their 90-year-old building in Minneapolis, a building that suffers from a lack of safe, dignified, and trauma-informed spaces, with a new building that will provide shelter and housing for up to 20 young people each night. So again, a really significant impact. Another partner organization, The Link, was able to add substance abuse counseling and a new and expanded life skills and career development program within their emergency shelter and housing programs, add additional units of housing for their culturally specific housing programs for LGBTQ plus youth and Black youth and families in North Minneapolis, as well as provide wage increases for our frontline staff. that's been a really critical issue across the state to really draw in the kind of staff that can really make an impact with young people. The Link was also awarded emergency shelter capital funding that will allow them to purchase the buildings that they're currently renting and make much needed building and safety improvements. So significant impacts across the board and across the state in terms of how we're investing in young people. So I want to thank you on behalf of LSS and the Youth Services Network for these increased investments. This really helps young people feel a sense of belonging, connect them with supportive adults, and really create a future that helps fulfill their potential. So you've made that possible, and we're very grateful. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thanks for your work.
Yeah,
really appreciate it. Sherry Reimers is up next. You can make your way up to the front. And then once you kind of get yourself settled in, and then you can share your pronouns if you're comfortable, and then proceed with your testimony. Whenever you're ready.
Good morning, Chair Pinto, Vice Chair Keeler, and committee members. My name is Sherry Reimers, and I serve as the Executive Director of the Andy Young Center. I humbly and graciously thank this committee for the investments made in 2023 to address homelessness, specifically youth homelessness in the Pathway Home Act. The Andy Young Center was founded in 1983 in response to the disproportionate number of youth in out-of-home placement and homeless youth across the American Indian community. Today, we operate three facilities in St. Paul, and our mission is to provide a healing place for families to thrive in safety and wellness. We have the only emergency shelter in the East Metro that provides a safe space for children being referred from Ramsey and surrounding counties. And I should add that we also receive referrals from across the state and the country, our most recent from California. For the community's most vulnerable children in need of protective supervision and homeless youth seeking a safe place of refuge, our organization not only serves countless American Indian youth, but all youth, regardless of gender, race, and ethnicity. Our center serves children ages, I should say, our emergency shelter serves children ages 5 through 17, and our youth lodge serves 16 through 21. Both buildings are more than 100 years old and have serious critical capital needs. As any shelter provider will tell you, buildings are more than a shelter. They are a home for the most vulnerable youth. It provides a safe, welcoming environment that matches our mission for each and every young person coming through our doors, which is why I want to highlight the first time state investment made in this, in the first time shelter. Boy.
No problem.
Yep. The state, sorry, struck
me. No, you're doing just fine.
I want to highlight the first time state investment made in shelter capital. Before 2023, the state never had a specific funding mechanism for the capital needs of emergency shelters across Minnesota. While others are homes for our children, the condition of our bathrooms, our kitchen, our rooms is unacceptable. Shelters are trying their best to be person-centered with trauma-informed design, but shelter as a use can't be financed anywhere without public funding source. Many of our shelters have fallen into disrepair. With $100 million included in the Pathway Home Act, not only are communities able to add shelter that didn't have them beforehand, but shelters like Andy Young are able to make the necessary capital improvements to keep our programming going for another 40 years and beyond. While we certainly need to continue to invest in shelter capacity and operations across Minnesota, you did something last year that no legislature has ever done, and because of that, children and adults experiencing homelessness are able to stay in safer, more dignified spaces as they work on healing from their experiences and finding stability. I thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. Miigwech.
Thank you so much. Thanks for your words. Thanks for your work. So glad to have you with us. We really appreciate all that you do. And our final testifier, Michael Gore, if I'm pronouncing your last name correctly, come on up, and once you get settled in, share your pronouns if you're comfortable doing so, and proceed with your testimony. So glad to have you with us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And it is right, you pronounced it correctly,
okay.
Gore. My name is Michael Gore. I'm the president and CEO of Catholic Charities of Twin Cities. Some of you know our organization well, some of you may not, but we're one of the leading providers of shelter of homeless services in Twin Cities. So, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, like our prior speakers, I want to thank this body for investing in most vulnerable community members. And so I want to say thank you very much for all you have done and all you will do on behalf of folks who are unable to speak on their behalf. So I represent the Catholic Charities Twin Cities. To that end, I just want to let you know briefly how the resources was so timely, but more importantly, how we were able to serve our community. As we receive resources, one of the things we do often is keep track data and how many folks are coming before Catholic Charities. And not too surprising, and I'm sure for some of you, last year alone, we have seen over a 37% increase in our services. What it means for us is this really is accelerating at a rate that we cannot keep up with the demand. This number represents even greater than pre-pandemic in our community. So demand is ever increasing. Just last year, we were able to serve over 12,000 unique individuals coming into our facilities in both Minneapolis and St. Paul. And that translated into serving three meals, hot meals a day. On month of December alone, I just want to give you statistics, we served over 1,200 meals per day. This is breakfast, lunch, and dinner. So to say all that, I think you can see the level of challenges in our community, members of the committee, and we want to say thank you very much for investments you have made, and we're asking for ongoing investments in supporting unsheltered homeless community that we provide every day as we fulfill our mission as well. As you know, some of our folks that are coming to us are suffering from a multitude of challenges. Most often you have a concurrent issues that we're making sure they're provided both mental health services as well as chemical dependency. And we are able to work on those issues in partnering with a variety of different community members as well as health insurance providers as well. So we want to say thank you very much for ongoing investments, and I represent one of the larger entities in our community, as I stated earlier, and we want to say please don't forget about ongoing support that we need and ongoing services that we need to provide to most vulnerable community members. And we once again want to thank all of you and your commitment and your dedication in serving our community in a most meaningful, impactful way. For us, that means investing in most vulnerable community members, either adults or young people in our community. So thank you very much, Mr. Chair, members of this committee.
Thank you, Mr. Gore. Thanks for being here. Thanks for your really important work. Members, so that was our last testifier. Questions for any of the testifiers or our staff about the impact of the historic funding that was passed to address homelessness last session? Yes, Representative Hudson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple of questions. I believe the first one would best be addressed by Ms. Tinbrook.
Yeah. Commissioner, why don't you come on up if you can, as Representative Hudson is asking his question.
So on page 5, there's reference to, quote, culturally specific motel vouchers. I was just wondering if you could expound upon what that means and how those operate.
And Commissioner, thank you. So, yes, that's on sort of slide 5 on the packet. Folks following along at home can find that as well. And Commissioner, if you could please respond to the question.
Thank you very much, Chair Pinto. Representative, I just looked at our OEO staff. It sounds like they don't have that information right now for you, but I'm assuming we can get that to you as well.
Okay.
And please do. Representative Hudson, though, we'll send things back to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Commissioner Tinbrook. The next question I had for you was on slide 9 of the presentation in reference to the homeless youth cash stipend pilot. It states that the program awarded $5.4 million to provide direct cash stipends to 135 youth. You do the math on that, and that's $40,000 per person. My question is that what we did? Did we hand out $40,000 to people, or is there some sort of surplus that will be utilized in the future?
Thank you. Commissioner. Good question. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Once again, looking to the staff who do the programming on these to answer the detailed questions. Thanks, Nick.
Thank you, Commissioner. So, Nick Dem, as you come up, you can settle in, introduce yourself, and answer the question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Nick Dem with DHS. Representative, the pilot project will award cash stipends to the participants, but it also includes support services. So a large portion of the funding will go toward support services that are being provided by community-based organizations. So it's both cash stipend and support services.
Representative Hudson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would it be fair to say then that the cost for providing those stipends and support services per person is $40,000, or are there factors that determine how much is spent on a particular individual as opposed to another?
Mr. Dem, and I may have a question relating to that, but Mr. Dem will go to you first.
Mr. Chair, Representative, great question. So the organization that is administering the program, Youth Prize, they have worked to establish the cash stipend amounts at each of the three sites. So the stipend amounts will be $1,000 for the pilot in southern St. Louis County. And then there will also be the option to get $1,200 for a participant that is a parent. Similar in Hennepin County, the stipend amount will be $1,000 a month for each participant. And again, it could be up to $1,200 if the participant has a child. And then in northern St. Louis County, the stipend amount will be $900 a month. So those are the stipend amounts, and the pilot project is scheduled to be 2 years of support. And then the services that are provided are expected to be around $11,000 per participant.
I think there's a portion, Representative Hudson, and we clearly will want more detail on this, but I think a portion of the funding that's kind of not reflected here is it's a pilot program that's intended to be a study. So I do think that a portion of the $5.4 million is going to study in its three different sites and to get results back to see kind of how is this worked on, having these young people get the stipend, the services, et cetera. So sort of the 40,000 per, if you do that math, I think a portion is probably, you know, there's some administration of the program, but then there's the research and evaluation. So you have to take that out. But we probably, I'm sensing, we're probably going to want to get more details on it. But I'll send things back to you, Representative Hudson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Absolutely. I would very much appreciate a better breakdown of exactly how the money is being spent, you know, just for clarity of understanding.
No, of course, yeah.
If you'll indulge me, I have one more general question that could be addressed to any of the testifiers. I apologize if I'm mispronouncing, but I believe Mr. Verretti made reference to outgrowing space and what was expected to be a temporary problem proved to not be. There were several references by testifiers to increases in homelessness statewide. Mr. Gore referenced that the increase that is currently being seen is even greater than pre-pandemic levels. And so I guess what I would be interested in from any of the testifiers who feel moved to respond is your insights into what is driving that and the extent to which these increased investments can be projected to actually move us closer to the stated goal of ending homelessness. So instead of seeing this continual curve upward, at some point there's a peak and things start to actually get resolved.
So Ms. Send, the commissioner, I think very well positioned person is very well positioned to respond to that, Representative.
Thanks, Chair Pinto. Thanks, Representative Hudson. The thing that is driving those numbers is the increase in the cost of housing and the lack and the gap in affordable housing that we have in the state, and that wages don't keep pace. So that is the overall driving factor in the reasons we're seeing increases in homelessness nationwide. In Minnesota, just to put it in really specific context, we have 177,000 households that make less than 30% of our area median income, and we only have 119,000 units that are priced at that point. And so there's already a huge gap. And then of that, some portion of those units are taken up by families and individuals that make more than 30%. So we have a huge gap in the kind of housing that's available. So people end up spending 80%, 90% of their income on their housing if they have housing at all. I've always been kind of amazed, to be honest, that with that kind of a housing gap, that we don't see more people experiencing homelessness in our state. And I think that is because people are incredibly resourceful and resilient and driven to not be experiencing homelessness. So that is the number one factor in the reason that we're seeing the increases that we are. I will say in the state of Minnesota last year, we saw about a 6% increase. That was driven by about a 27% increase in family homelessness specifically. And that has a lot to do with our, you know, going back from our eviction preventions that we had in place during the pandemic, that had a major impact on families. And many, many families did end up becoming homeless because they couldn't prevent it in the first place. So to get to your broader question, the reason that we have a $2.6 billion housing stability package across 9 agencies is that the work of this committee is so critical, but you are in the work of really this crisis response, building a crisis response for folks. There are other parts of our package that are about addressing the lack of affordable housing, building more prevention dollars, adding rental assistance. So there's a comprehensive approach here that we hope will have the impact that we seek.
This is a really important discussion and topic. I'm going to send back, Representative Hudson, do you have any kind of follow-up at the moment? Okay, but I'm so glad that you brought that up, and because this kind of gets down to the fundamentals, right? And as you say, Commissioner, our committee is kind of focused at the spot where we're lacking affordable housing, and we're dealing with the consequences, just making sure to taking care of people, and then there's other work being done in other areas. Representative Zalesnikar, you're up next.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you. My question is kind of a follow-up on the piece of the pilot that's happening right now and the tracking of the system and what that tracking is going to look like. And one of the things that I am reminded of when I went into a school, there was two pictures, and one of the pictures was a picture of a home, and the next picture was a picture of the school. And the first picture in the home said, "What happens here?" And the second picture was the school said, "Affects what happens here." And so my question is not so much about the money allocation for the youth that are coming in right now in St. Louis County or in down here, is that the structure of where we live is one piece of it, but abuse, addictions, and trauma and different scenarios happen under many roofs or no roofs in Minnesota at all corners of the state. And so as we deliver these programs, looking at these benchmarks of tracking, whether it's, you know, education and pathways to give the people the opportunity that we're all seeking to have. Because the class we were at earlier this week was talking about early infant and serve and return. You know, the infant smiles, you smile back, you're serving return. And I think that serve and return has to continue then into the adult years. There has to be some expectations then. Certainly, just money won't solve a problem. And the housing they're critical in an isolated case to ramp up and get programs and everything going. But the ultimate goal is to have a change, a total change for the person. And I'm curious to see what benchmarks and dashboards the agency's creating to report back to this committee on this investment and what is happening then for the opportunities for the people and the families that are, whether it's skills or in coaching and mental health, because we have a 40% mental health increase in the state after the pandemic. And I can't believe that people that are homeless aren't facing that too, as well as people that aren't. And so as we address these issues, the goal is to have success and pathways forward for education and children and families and jobs and success, where this isn't the trajectory of homeless increasing. So I'm interested in the measurement tools of how we're going to actually have data for this committee.
Yeah, Commissioner, any thoughts on in response to that, or Nick or Mr. Dem?
Mr. Chair, Representative, thank you for that question. As Chair Pinto noted, there is a evaluation component of this pilot. And so Youth Prize, it has partnered with the research organization Chapin Hall. And so they have a very detailed research methodology that they'll be using. We actually have a first report that we'll be submitting to you all probably within the next couple days, if not by early next week. And that will break down the research methodology that Chapin Hall is using, and that will include a lot of data collection on various metrics of outcomes. So we will have a lot more data to provide. I will say that starting this summer and into the fall, the Youth Prize has primarily been focused on kind of laying the groundwork of the pilot. It has not actually started yet. So the pilot will start in June of this year, so we don't have that data yet, but we will have a lot of data based on the work of that research partner.
Okay, Representative Zelenikar, follow up.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. Just one follow up. My observations in just working with other government programs that required participation both sides in order to have funding match. And so my suggestion would be, I hope that the tools will allow for the participant receiving the money to have benchmarks for success where that they have to attend the classes and they have to show that they're doing the pieces that have been identified that are the supportive needs, that they're participating and attending and doing that, that there's a serve and return expectation to for their best interest to have a pathway forward of prosperity, that they're not staying at the same place they were when we first seek services. So thank you. That's it.
Thank you so much. I'm Representative Davis. You're up next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Tenbrook, for being here. I just want to say one positive thing. I'm really encouraged to see that there is help here for mental health. Thank you to this committee for that. Representative Hudson brought this up under the homeless youth cash stipend pilot. And again, I apologize if you already answered this question. So it says new pilot program awarded $5.4 million to provide direct cash stipends to 135 youth in Hennepin and St. Louis counties. As Representative Hudson pointed out, that potentially could come out to $40,000 per youth. And you said that, well, a lot of that money is going towards services being provided for them. I just want to make sure that was correct. I heard that correct.
I think that's correct, Mr. Dem.
Mr. Chair, Representative, that is correct. There will be a stipend component, and there's currently an RFP that is out right now for community-based providers to provide various types of services to the youth participating in the program.
And I will say, just to send back to Representative Davis, that given this is just the one line, I definitely will want to have, and we will have a report from Youth Prize and information in a lot more detail given members'
yep.
questions. And I'll send it back to Representative Davis, but just to be clear that we should, given the members' interests, we want to make sure we get a lot more detail about the program. Representative Davis, back to you.
Thank you. And so I guess what I would like to see, Mr. Chair, in that detail is, and perhaps Representative Hudson already addressed this as well, like I believe there is cash just being given to them, though, not for programs, just to, you know, this is your spending cash. Is that accurate as well?
I think Mr. Dem had said before between $900 to $1,200 per young person is what I'd heard. But Mr. Dem.
For spending cash.
So it's a.
To do with what they want.
A cash stipend, that's what the program is. But Mr. Dem, let's have you clarify.
Mr. Chair, so the pilot is designed to give them a cash stipend that is roughly equivalent to the cost of housing. So Youth Prize spent a lot of time looking at various data sources in terms of what rental prices are to determine that stipend amount. So it is largely designed to reflect the cost of housing.
Okay. Representative Davis.
Yeah, and I would just like to, and I'll end this line of questioning, move on to something else, but I just want to make sure that we get those receipts from those youth.
You're saying that, Representative Davis, so in other words, finding out exactly what the cash was spent on. Is that what you're saying?
Correct. I just want to make sure there's some accountability there.
Well, I think the purpose of the pilot study, I believe, is in fact to sort of see, you know, provide that cash, see how that's spent, what the impact is on the young person, sort of are they on a better trajectory, et cetera. So I think the purpose is actually to get a lot of detail. But let's make sure, and I was going to save this for the end, but I guess I'll just say this now, that whether or not, if Youth Rise is looking or whoever's connected with them, we're going to ask for a lot of information, explanation about how the program is working, how it's proposed to work, all the details. Well, then we'll get that out to members.
Yes, and the heart, Mr. Chair, the heart behind it is, it's a great opportunity for them to learn. And maybe some of them already have learned this, but to be responsible with the taxpayers' dollars. So that's the heart behind it.
Yeah.
And then, so I just have, Mr. Chair, one more question. On page 11 of the presentation, and again, this will, I'll be done after this. Page 11 of the presentation.
The Crossroads
to Justice Plan. Oh, yes, here we go. Yep, Crossroads to Justice Plan. The plan was co-developed with 10 paid consultants with lived experience of homelessness. Could you provide for us a list of those consultants and how much they were paid?
I doubt right at the moment, but I assume we can
sure,
get that.
Yep, a request for the, yep.
So Commissioner, though, let's get, Commissioner?
Chair Pinto, Representative, sure. Yeah, we can certainly provide the names of who are our consultants. We hired through a third-party vendor, 10 people with lived experience of homelessness to co-lead community conversations all across the state and work with state agencies on specific strategies that would go into our justice plan. So, yes, happy to do that.
Thank you, Commissioner. Yeah. Thank you, Representative Davis. Yeah, I suppose if we're looking for expertise, we want to make sure that our plans are built on the strongest foundation and expertise possible. Nobody has better expertise than somebody who's actually experienced homelessness, if you're trying to build a plan to address that. So thank you. So we'll get that out to the committee as well. Other questions or comments from members at this time? Okay, we have, so we're just looking to see. And Lee Daniels, often we give you, I figure, sort of rely on you to raise your hand too, but Lee Daniels, if you have anything you want to say, sir.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. And I want to thank everybody for a robust discussion, and I do honor the intent of this huge spending to get people not to be homeless. I'm going to start with my little hometown of Faribault. I was just at a gala last Saturday night. I was invited by our River Valley Church. It's Ruth's House. It's a battered women's shelter. I believe they own between 11 and 14 houses in town, and they've got this big old house right next to where we used to live, right up the hill. And they take care of literally thousands of families through the last, you know, decade or so. They would have been homeless, and now they're not homeless. They teach them the skills to, you know, budget their money, plan for certain things, actually have separate savings accounts for, you know, emergency funds. Because it's a church-funded deal, it's usually, you know, tithing in there. But anyway, I was talking to one of the board members after the event, and they have about a $400,000 a year operating cost. At the gala alone, we raised, we don't have a final number, I haven't checked on that yet, but I know it was well over $200,000 raised in one night in donations. And I'm just wondering if some of the other models have any type of, you know, I know the MICC, the Minnesota Independent Community College, has a gala coming up in about a month. And they raise a tremendous amount of money, you know, through donations. So back when I first started running and would be on my soapbox and say, what happened to when neighbors took care of neighbors and friends took care of friends and, you know, whoever couldn't get taken care of, got the churches took care of it. And I know it's very old-fashioned, very, you know, I'm old. But it worked. And it was people doing the right thing for the right reason. And my only comparison to that, I'd like to find out, all these programs may be very well and fine, but we got to make sure we keep the guardrails on them so we know, and that's what these reports will be coming out later. So one of my asks would be the overall cost to administer these new programs, all the extra funding that's put in there, how much that goes towards administration of the programs, and how much actually helps the homeless. So if we can get that information, that would make my heart rest better, because I know in our local community, we just have a tremendous outreach of pouring of community involvement, and that's really neat, because then you know where your money's going, and it's just a really neat experience. I try to go to every gal that they have, and I missed like two over the last 10 years, but they do an outstanding job of of counseling and protecting and teaching. So anyway, if I get the costs on this administration overall, and maybe we could start thinking about going back to the old ways of neighbors taking care of neighbors, friends taking care of friends, and whoever else needs help, maybe the church can step in a little bit. Well, that's just my comment of the day.
Thank you, Lee Daniels. And I'll note that of our four testifiers, two, in fact, in their organizational names have the names of faith communities. So I think there is a real partnership. And these are folks coming to us, presumably motivated by faith as part of their organizations. And then also saying, boy, we need to collaborate with the public sector as well. I want to ask the commissioner to just comment on anything you'd like to say regarding that, commissioner.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. And thank you, Representative, for the opportunity to respond to that. I just want to be really clear, and I don't want to speak on behalf of all providers in the state, but I think it's pretty close that the majority of providers that provide services to people experiencing homelessness rely on multiple sources to do their work. Public dollars are one piece and certainly important. They help leverage a great deal of philanthropic dollars and faith community dollars and private donations as well. And so I look out to my I'm getting lots of nods. Yes. So a huge proportion of the dollars that providers spend do come from the community. And also just to be clear that in addition to formal programs that are serving people who maybe have the greatest vulnerabilities or have had the biggest challenges and end up experiencing homelessness, I am just so proud to live in this state. I think it is a state that does exactly what you talked about. It is a state where people do step up and help each other all across communities. And so these aren't the only places where people who are on the edge of homelessness are served, but they are a critical part of the story, because without them, we would have lots of people with very complex conditions and health conditions who are on our streets. So thank you for that question.
Thank you. And then to Lee Daniels' request, I'll just ask folks from your organization, Commissioner, from DHS, if there's information could be provided about sort of the amount going to administrative costs, which I'll just say we know it's essential. In fact, part of the reason to make sure funds are going to the right place is to make sure you have to spend the dollars on the administrative costs as well. So if we can get some of that to get out to committee members, and Representative Daniels, if you then have more specific questions to follow up on that, of course, we can do that as well. I'm going to end with Vice Chair Keeler. And then I'll conclude the meeting. Vice Chair Keeler.
Thank you, Chair. I promise there won't be any other meetings that I go after. We'll let you be last. I just feel like this is something that, as many of you know, it's a deep passion of mine to end homelessness in Minnesota. I say that everywhere I go. That doesn't change. And I think to your response, right, like we've never stopped the communities from showing up and helping. From the math, I'm not great at math, it still sounds like from what you raised, there was still 50% of the gap that needed. And so I know that there's galas. I know that the Link has one coming up. I do know that there's a lot of community supports. But at the end of the day, the need is still growing. And we do care about our neighbors. And I think that's what we did in this work. As you remember, when the Pathway Home Act went to the floor, it was a bipartisan vote in support of that, because we all really believed that these parameters were needed. As far as the administration costs, you know, one of the things that we did really strategically is we gave the money directly to the shelters versus counties, bigger organizations, so that administrative cost, you know, wasn't broke down into all these different hand-me-down organizations. That was very intentional, because I'm with you. In the money that we send out the door, it needs to go to the people who are most in need versus, like, you know, directors and all these different places that are just passing down money. And we worked really close across the aisle to make sure that we had parameters in place. That's why we have so much reporting that's supposed to come back to us, so that we can see, especially the pilot program that you all brought up. I mean, we are really looking for those numbers to come back. It wasn't funding that went on for a long period of time. To be quite frank, I had some questions about it. And to move forward, I was like, I need to see the numbers and how we're doing this and how we're actually supporting people. So I agree with that. That's why it was a pilot program for a shorter amount of time than originally asked and less money than originally asked. But at the end of the day, my biggest thanks is to the providers. We put money in your hands to do what we know that you can do best. We trusted you, and you've really been able to do a lot of fantastic work. We've been able to grow collectively, and I think what we've done is we've grown a community not working in those silos of crisis anymore, and we'll continue to show up together, continue to advocate, and thank you to this committee for allowing the space and time to have honest conversations to protect our future generations, because we know homelessness is not just impacting the one person at that one time. It's very generational, and I can speak from my own experience that plays out for many generations. So thank you for your honest conversations and compassion to come to this table around the effort to feed and house all of Minnesota. Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, Chair, and thank you, members.
Thank you so much, Vice Chair Keeler. Thanks for your work. And members, no doubt that every one of us wants to make sure the folks in our state have a stable and affordable place to live. And so thanks you to members for your work. And then thank you especially, as Vice Chair Keeler said, to those of you doing the work. Regardless, the funds come from multiple places, but you are the ones on the ground doing that work on behalf of all of us. Whether you're 100% philanthropic funded, getting public funding, you are out there doing that work, and we're just so grateful to you for that. And members, thank you for the conversation. It's so important that we have it. And we're going to be due on the floor at 10:10, so we're going to end a few minutes early. And please continue to be in touch. And with that, our meeting is adjourned.